Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 280 for July the 14th, 2011. I'm Evan Lottie, senior editor at PC Gamer Magazine, and inside the sealed vault of podcasting quality and wonder. I'm throwing this together on the fly, guys. Josh Augustine across from me.
Ahoy. There's a lot of wonder here.
I agree. Dan Stapleton, how you doing?
And a moderate amount of quality.
Lucas Sullivan on my right, how you doing?
Hi. I couldn't think of anything clever to say in the time allotted.
The quality has just declined.
Yes.
All right, guys. So we've got a little bit of news to talk about this week. Josh was on an interesting trip that we'll get to in a minute. But first,
okay.
I'm thrilled. We announced a game on the website yesterday, and a PC exclusive game at that. It's called Hard Reset, and it's sort of a dark sci-fi, cyberpunk, whatever term you want to put on it, single player only FPS. And it's being created by a new studio out of Poland called Flying Wild Hog. That's a pretty good name, if I do say so. Mm-hmm. And what's cool about the studio is these are sort of, I don't want to call them refugees. They didn't leave in a bad way. But
alumni.
Alumni is a good word, or I like to call it some sort of like game developing Voltron made up of members of CD Projekt, the Witcher guys, and People Can Fly, the folks that made Painkiller, as well as Bulletstorm.
What I don't get is why do Polish companies have English names?
I don't know. They probably speak English pretty well over there.
Well, I'm sure they do, but yeah. Seems weird. Anyway, carry on.
Well, CD Projekt has a K in it, if that makes you feel better.
It does.
slightly foreign, slightly exotic.
No, that's very distinctive.
Indeed. So go read the announcement on PCGamer.com. It's up there right now. We've been playing it a little bit. I wish Chris was here. He's played the most of it. Chris and Logan, they are...
Then he wouldn't be able to talk about it the best.
I know. But it's just such a... The thing about it is, like, we know it's probably going to be priced at a sort of downloadable, quote-unquote, price. So less than $60, maybe something like $30, $40, maybe as low as $20, $25. But it looks beautiful. I mean, it's a proprietary engine that they built.
If I guess how much it's yet priced for, do I get a free copy?
We've got a build of it in the office if you want that, Dan.
Okay.
You can guess anyway. You can gamify our podcast.
I bid $33.01.
Is this price is right rules?
Apparently.
We're going by?
Yeah.
All right. Big focus on like gun customization in the game that we can talk about a little bit. And it's sort of Painkiller in a Blade Runner universe. That's kind of the right way of representing it, I think. Just lots of enemies being magnetized toward you. The story sort of, it's all about kind of, this robot takeover of humanity. There's one last human city, you're defending it, and you're just shooting all these robots with these really creative guns.
Have you said the name of it yet?
Yeah, I think so. Hard Reset.
Okay. So, is there a state gun?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Is there that little spinny blade thing that you could bounce people with?
There's much more emphasis on like electricity and like energy weapons.
Okay.
So are all the enemies robots?
Yes.
Ooh, interesting.
Indeed. Anyway.
Spoiler alert.
So, the cool news about this, what really made me happy was this coming out in September. Coming out in September, we're announcing it now, and it's coming out in 2 months. That's pretty rare and kind of welcome that we don't have to wait a year and a half, whatever. So put it on your radar. Go read about it on our site or on hardresetgame.com. Watch the teaser trailer. Just kind of, I think it immediately sells you on the quality of the engine. And just looking forward to these guys making more games on the engine and more single player PC exclusive shooters. I mean, we want that. Painkiller, you can say you liked it or you didn't, but I think they had really creative weapons. I think it's just a genre that isn't really being hit on right now, other than by Serious Sam, I guess, a little bit.
Serious Sam 3, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So getting to Josh, who has recently returned to us from, was it in Texas?
Vegas, actually. Yeah.
Man, same thing.
Sin City, High roller, if you will.
Not California.
No.
That area between the coasts, that spot, one place.
So you were at Sony Online Entertainment's Fanfare. It's gathering for... its communities, including EverQuest and
Yeah, mostly EverQuest people, actually. EverQuest, cool. EverQuest 2.
You mean it wasn't mostly Star Wars Galaxies?
Believe it or not.
You don't say.
So weird.
Just like six guys wielding torches and pitchforks.
Yeah, there was one heckler that was shouting out stuff about Galaxies during like the keynote presentation and stuff. Geez. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad.
So real quick, like as a show, how does the scene compare to BlizzCon or anything else?
Yeah, definitely. I haven't been to PAX, so I can't compare it to PAX. Yeah. I've been to GDC, BlizzCon. BlizzCon is so professional and so refined. Like, you know, the developers are behind stage. You know, there's big black curtains behind those stage. You see them when they come on stage with shining lights and all that sort of stuff. You know, everything is just so polished and clean. And fanfare is more like a big party. Like, the developers are just walking around. Instead of, like, stages with presentations, there's just rooms with, you know, a desk up front where the developers just walk in, talking with the people as they're walking in, just sit down at the table and just start talking. They have a closing feast, which which was fantastic. Like, just the idea.
Does someone yell feast?
No, I wanted it to be like.
Does that happen?
No, oh. I wish. I wanted it to be like medieval times, like with like you know like maybe like EverQuest pig. Cosplayers yeah. fighting, you know, just and yeah, leg. You're tearing off the turkey leg. It was very fancy food. There's probably like 2,000 people there.
Okay.
So it's smaller than BlizzCon for sure.
By about six times. Right?
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, it has that much more personal feel. One night, they have a pool party. And when I thought pool party, you know, at some place like this, you know, I pictured, you know, an indoor swimming pool, maybe like 50 people running around.
Joking. A pool party in Vegas is something
yes,
very different.
Yes, I forgot that I was in Vegas. And so it's like this giant outdoor area with three pools, an open bar for all attendees. There was one guy who had definitely had too much to drink. He had on one shoulder an EverQuest 2 tattoo and a Magic the Gathering tattoo on the other one. And he was just walking around like with anybody that had a camera, video camera, anything like, hey, you want to see my tattoos?
What a baller.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is probably the only time all year that he will get a yes response
That's
to
true,
that huh? question.
Indeed,
so
indeed.
He's got to soak that up while he can.
Thank Bug you, life.
Thank you for a moment for transporting us to that unique scene, Josh.
Yeah, no
so
problem.
The I wouldn't call it an announcement, but confirmation and sort of name change, actually, for one of the games.
Yeah.
PlanetSide 2, or I guess let's call it PlanetSide.
Yes.
So we know... It's roughly set at the same time as PlanetSide 1, mm-hmm. that there's the same factions. We know, we were talking about on the site this week, EVE Online and Battlefield 2 are kind of like major inspirations for it. We know that the maps are going to be sort of roughly indoor and outdoor, you know, 50-50
yeah.
balance. And we know that like territory capture is still the big mechanic that sort of affects the metagame between matches. So what else? I mean, did it impress you? What are the big questions in the community right now? You wrote some really... detailed stuff on the site, but
yeah, definitely. I'm definitely impressed. It's can be pictured as like they call it a reimagining of PlanetSide, so mm-hmm. it's not even like a sequel or anything like that. Like in a lore wise, it's just a recreation of it. It started off as just a mod, or not a mod, an update for the game,
yeah.
a graphics update and a shift to free to play. That mm-hmm. was the plan.
Sort of like a Battlefield play
yeah,
for free.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah
that's how it started out mm-hmm. as, and then once they started getting into it, like they realized that this was the project they were most excited about, so they just wanted to make it a full game. They built a engine from scratch, Forge Light in house. It's what they're also using to build EQ Next. The biggest things, there's no instancing in the entire game. I'm sad that they keep using the phrase maps, and I'm going to try and kind of break that idea kind of to our readers. Because when you think of maps, you think of, you know, other online shooters. You know, this is a contained map.
Right.
You know, there's no instancing at all. When they say map, they just mean like a territory, like an area of the globe. Because this planet is 100% open, it's divided into hundreds of different territories. And each of those territories, kind of like PlanetSide, the original, has a facility on it that if you capture that facility, you gain control of that territory. And so the fights will be kind of centralized on those facilities. But they're trying to get a lot more kind of outdoor combat involved and keeping that more interesting as well. They're trying to put in more urban environments. John Smedley, their president, mentioned, you know, that he really likes the urban environments and like Call of Duty and stuff like that. He mentioned Battlefield 2 as having the best vehicle combat in any online shooter. Like he thought that was like the pinnacle, that they want to be at least that good. He liked EVE Online for their sandbox. They kept wanting to like emphasize this is a sandbox area. You know, they're going to have factions competing for these different territories. The territories give resources and kind of they want that political kind of intrigue that EVE Online has. They aren't going to be able to do single shard servers at launch, which is a big part of what gives EVE Online that everybody's in the same world. You don't have, you know, the same territory controlled by 10 different people on 10 different servers. But he said they want to do that as soon as they start adding multiple planets. Because then, for whatever reason, I guess it's easier to keep the server, each planet on its own server, and then it can all be part of the same universe.
I think because people are more spread out, right? Create like huge lag spikes.
Yeah, but I mean, it sounds really, really cool. You know, it remains to be seen whether SOE can live up to all this hype that they're building. But it's definitely a core foundation of, you know, hey, what if, you know, online shooters, you could control this territory, and you're like, whether you win actually matters. And yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
Sure. In terms of the game's identity, I'm curious if do you think it's more of a shooter than Global Agenda, or about the same amount?
That's a tough call.
Just in terms of mechanics and, you know, abilities. I mean, there's a big skill tree for every
I would say, player. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the skill tree, I should have mentioned that. That's another place where it takes a lot of inspiration from EVE Online. So there are classes. I can't remember how many there are, if they've even confirmed all of them.
There's like medic and heavy weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Light weapons, a recon guy.
Yep.
And so you have this tree that's filled with a bunch of different skills. They call them certs. Like, you know, you can have like 10 different certs for the same gun. You know, one makes it fire faster, one, you know, less recoil.
Reload speed.
Yeah, exactly. All that sort of stuff. So you can kind of choose and customize, and they have a ton for the vehicles as well. So if you want to specialize in being like a transporter or something, you aren't just specializing in vehicles as a whole. You're specializing in a particular vehicle. Like, they described the vehicles as separate classes.
Bus driver. Like,
yeah, if you want to be a medic, you know, you can be a medic, or you can just be the guy that drives or flies the... I'm totally blanking. It's like the Wasp or something. It's the very mobile air one. And so you level your skills while you're offline, like EVE Online. It goes faster if you're online. As you're getting kills, your skills get bumped up a bit faster.
Sure.
But in general, it's just like, you know, over 2 hours it'll unlock and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, and there's full physics in the engine. And it's used to power the vehicles, because in Planetside, the vehicles are basically just like floating. Like, but
was this game going to be? I thought it was going to be cross-platform with PS3, or is it? No.
They haven't confirmed that. Basically, yes, it will be.
Yeah.
Because when someone asked John Smedley that, he's like, "Well, you know, we haven't said anything like that, but we're working on many games, and we want a lot of our future games to be on the PS3 as well."
Right.
And he like kind of gave a knowing smile. So it's like he said that it is, but it's just not confirmed yet.
Right. So that just surprised me to hear that they're using PhysX with it then.
Yeah, it's built into their engine.
Yeah,
I know the engine that they're building from scratch. Yeah, so I don't know how that's going
to
work.
I don't know enough about the PS3 to say whether or not they can do that.
Yeah, and one thing he kept saying over and over was, you don't have to have an NVIDIA card to take advantage of it. So I don't know if maybe it's kind of a limited version of PhysX.
So there are two versions of PhysX. One is the free API that NVIDIA gives away to anybody to use in their games. And they do that just to get the technology out there. And encourage people to use it, because what is limited to NVIDIA cards only is the PhysX hardware acceleration, and you can make ATI cards, AMD cards do it, but you know, you have to kind of get in there and hack them a bit, but mess with the drivers. So that's what they probably won't be.
Okay, so it probably is just the API then.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited. It looks really good.
Yeah,
a lot of potential. Really excited to see gameplay. So far, we've just seen screenshots.
Good news. Any other big surprises out of Fanfare?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest surprise to me was just how many people are still playing EverQuest. Like,
least 2,000.
Well, yeah. I was talking with the when you know they announced the games. You know, here's the changes for this game. Like, EverQuest got so much cheering. Like, Star Wars Galaxies, DCUO. I mean, Free Realms is not surprising. You know, it's more of a kid's game. But, I mean, EverQuest just got so much more cheers. Talking with the creative manager for it, or creative director, sorry. He was telling me that, like, EverQuest 2 players are very much kind of typical MMO players that, you know, they play EverQuest 2, and then when the new shiny comes out, like when Rift comes out or WoW expansion launches, EverQuest 2 drops, and they go play that, and then they come back, you know, EverQuest 2 comes back up. But EverQuest is just these people that have been playing for, like, 10 or 11 years. They don't go to other MMOs. They don't do anything. They never stop. They just keep going.
It's flat progress.
Yeah.
Man.
And yeah, and so EverQuest 2, they're adding in tools to let you build your own content, which is always cool. I like to see that in more and more MMOs. So it's pretty exciting. And yeah, that was about it. DCUO, which I am personally a big fan of, they're adding a green light, Green Lantern download pack,
yeah.
Which basically gives the power of light. It's going to have a bunch of four-player alerts.
Mm-hmm.
And a duo. It looks really cool. Light was a power that was in early builds of the game, and they took it out because they couldn't get it right. Essentially, they just didn't have time. And it sounds like they're doing a lot of really cool stuff with it. You can look on our site. It has a bunch of details. It's going to cost $10, and that's just the worst possible thing that SOE could be doing to this game right now. I mean, this is a fantastic game that nobody is playing because there's not enough content, and you can't justify a monthly subscription fee.
Yeah.
And the last thing you need to be doing is adding more barriers to entry for people. I mean, there's no way new players are going to be picking up this game if they just keep nickel and diming.
Also, it seems like they really missed the window of opportunity to put out Green Lantern, themed stuff. Like, the movie has come and gone.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very good.
Yeah. Everyone thought when they pulled it out of beta that that was the plan.
Right.
But it seems like all of their content has kind of been late. Like, right mm-hmm. now, their spring holiday is happening in-game. And, like, Valentine's Day came sometime in April. And the St. Patrick's Day stuff came after that. It's just, they seem to be pushing out content a lot slower than they planned. And right. so I bet it was planned to hit the movie, and they just missed it.
So one more question, Josh.
Yeah.
Can I see your new tattoo? I assume you came back from a drunken Vegas event with a new
Josh
tattoo.
Got it a is tramp but, yeah. stamp.
I can't show it in here. HR might get a little upset. So you know, maybe afterwards.
Yeah.
What happens in the podcasting room does usually.
That's true. Well. It's pretty blocked out pretty well in here. I will say just real fast on mm-hmm. Fanfare. If you are a fan of SOE games, I mean, I highly recommend going. It's really cool to just get that close to developers and talk with them in a very casual setting. At BlizzCon, you're not going to run into Tom Chilton or something and just start chatting about the game. But here, I mean, you could bump into anybody and
it's
they're just
intimate.
Talking. Yeah, it is.
Very intimate.
And whoa, I don't like the eyes you're making when you're saying that. And they also had Munchkin tournaments, which was
oh,
awesome.
Oh, damn, love that game.
Yeah,
that
although
was really cool.
At BlizzCon, Chris Metzen probably will show you his tattoos.
Yes.
What's your favorite Munchkin?
Ooh.
Expansion.
Oh, I haven't played all the expansions.
Oh, man.
I know. I just have whichever one Eric Belsas, our former intern, had. I can't even
Super
remember.
Super Munchkin is very good.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
All right. We also wanted to extend our congratulations to the winner of the North American Star League Championship. That's StarCraft II, if you've been following along. And yes, I'm about to give it away if you haven't watched the stream yet or the archive videos. Puma, who's, of course, an excellent player, but wasn't necessarily the most favored player of the tournament, faced OGSMC, who's probably still regarded as the best player in the world, Protoss, in the finals in an incredible 7-game series. If you like StarCraft, go to NASL.TV. Check out those archive videos. Just an incredible, surprising match. They had some technical difficulties initially in the tournament over the last weekend, but ended up just being a really surprising, fantastic finish. Go check it out. And on the topic of strategy, Mr. Stapleton, your specialty, we were reading earlier this week from mcvuk.com, a fellow outlet, from 2K's president, Christoph Hartmann, who's saying that strategy games are just not contemporary. I'm going to read the full quote. He was being interviewed about XCOM specifically.
Well, it was why XCOM is a shooter and not a strategy game, was what he was asked.
Yeah. So XCOM.
Yeah.
The 90s generation of gamers all love XCOM, and we own the IP, so we thought, okay, what do we do with it? Every studio we had wanted to do it, and each one had its own spin on it. But the problem was that turn-based strategy games were no longer the hottest thing on planet Earth. But this is not just a commercial thing. Strategy games are just not contemporary.
I mean, it is absolutely fair of him to say that strategy games are not the biggest selling genre right now. I mean that's indisputable, so it's hard to challenge him on that assertion, but I mean he goes on to say, let's see, I think I had there's something that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Let's see, well he makes the comparison. He says I'll use the example of music artists. Look at someone old school like Ray Charles. If he were to make music today, it would still be Ray Charles, but he would probably do it more in the style of Kanye West.
What?
Bringing Ray Charles back is all fine and good, but it just needs to move on. And
yeah,
you know, although the essence will still be the same, that's what we're trying to do, to renew XCOM, but in line with what this generation of gamers wants. Here it is. The team behind it is asking themselves every day, is it true to the values of the franchise? It's not just cashing in on the name. We need to renew it because times are changing. So that seems very dismissive. I mean, he's talking like, and there's another quote in there somewhere where he's talking about like the core value of the franchise. It's like there are certain aspects of the original XCOM that are being used in the new one, from what I've seen of it. Things like, you know, capturing alien technology and researching it and equipping it and then turning it against them. And apparently there will be some level of squad management. But the core values of it, it's such an apples to oranges thing to go from strategy to tactical squad management to even a tactical shooter.
Yeah.
It's just so far from what you started with that. I mean, when you take a game like this that has, well, let me put it this way: I don't understand why they think the XCOM name is valuable for this project, because
yeah,
like he says, there's this group of gamers from the '90s who loves XCOM, so by making a game that has, you know, that is so fundamentally different from it and calling it XCOM, you're kind of alienating those guys who want. What, you know, they want more of what they loved, and for people who didn't like that kind of game, you're telling them this game is that kind of game. So I don't really see why, you know, even though it's a shooter, so I don't really see why they think it's a good idea to you know, cross genres like that.
Yeah, I'm just kind of disappointed. Like the Ray Charles comparison to Kanye West, it just kind of reveals, you know, I don't want to be too presumptuous, but reveals kind of the macro level thinking that happens higher up in these companies, I think.
Well, it makes total sense from a business perspective.
From a business perspective, somebody with stockholders, it's like, I mean, does this guy really understand like what the street value, so to speak, of the XCOM name and license is in 2011? Like, it's pretty slim. There's a lot of nostalgia behind it, but again, like you're saying, Dan, why pick up this IP that, yes, you do own, it's yours, you can do what you want with it, why pull that out of the past and like disappoint all these people? And you know, from what we've seen, honestly, from what we saw at E3, not do something interesting with it and be handicapped by what he's saying about you know, trying to stay true to the core tenets of the franchise. I mean, again, this might change. We only saw a short, like 20 or 30 minute demo at E3. But as far as what we saw, your allies don't die. I mean, they get incapacitated.
Yeah,
that might be wrong. That might have just been in the context of that single mission. But this showed you getting your teammate up, and that's firmly against the values of XCOM, of being surprised, being shocked, and dealing with loss.
Yeah, know? I mean, that is one of the things that a lot of even like XCOM clones, like true XCOM clones, have like screwed that up. Like they made squad mates not die, and it just takes all the stakes are gone. Like all the tension is gone, pretty much. So that's like a huge, at least for me, one of the things that I really love about XCOM is the fragility of your soldiers and the fact that they can't die.
Totally.
But I mean, so for me, like the value, I think, to them is, hey, XCOM is a pretty catchy name. those are hard to come by these days.
Sounds like X-Men.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So you know, it is purely, I mean, he says in there, it's this isn't a business move. It's absolutely a business move. It's purely a business move. I mean, they are trying to make just the kinds of games that are most profitable. And again, I can't blame them for that, because they are in this to make money, and you know, the artistic concern and even nostalgic gaming and appreciation of a great game is all secondary to making money and staying in business.
Yeah, and I don't want to isolate his comments and put in a vacuum and just like attack that, but saying that strategy games are not contemporary, we were just talking about StarCraft and how popular that was with NASL in our last podcast. I mean, do we consider League of Legends a strategy game? I do. It's
yeah.
You know, you control a single character, but in terms of like the timing, the point of view, the teamwork.
I think of it more of as an action RPG. I think it's closer to Diablo than StarCraft. But
and you know, and certainly XCOM and Civ, you know, 2K's other.
Yeah, see that's
there's a big distinction between turn based and real time.
That's another thing. Yeah. How would you feel if you worked at Firaxis right now and heard the head of your company say this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like,
but you go on Steam and I mean the you know the concurrent users list, that Steam list of you know how many people are playing what game at this time. Civ 5 for the past couple months always been in the top 5 or 6.
Really?
Always. Hmm. Usually about 22,000, 23,000 people playing it at the peak during the day.
Yeah, that's encouraging to hear.
Yeah.
Essentially, is it just because strategy games don't go to consoles? Is that why he's saying this?
That's a component of it, I think. I mean, you just think about what's involved in creating an interface, you know, creating a control system that accommodates. I mean, League of Legends couldn't really happen on a console, I don't think, as is right now. I mean,
control would be horrible.
Just
it would
in
be
terms different, of the disconnection between the camera and your character, right?
I mean,
that's
and skill shots, I mean, would be impossible.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, exactly like it is, but they did get Torchlight working on console. So, I mean,
Torchlight is very different from League of Legends.
It is very different. So, like I said, it wouldn't be the same kind of thing. But you could probably do a MOBA style game.
I mean,
game.
just like StarCraft the original was on like GameCube or something. Like you can do it. Yeah,
StarCraft 64.
Yeah, N64. Yeah, it's just terrible.
Right.
Again, we don't want to just isolate one of his comments and take it out of context, but I think strategy games are changing. I do think that turn-based is a challenging thing to do financially right now.
Absolutely.
But I don't think we can say that strategy games as a whole, you look at StarCraft, you look at League of Legends, you look at MOBA in general, if you want to loop that under strategy, if you're comfortable with that, I mean, that's very contemporary. That's the heart of what's contemporary right now, partly because it's free-to-play, but...
I think it was just kind of very poorly phrased on his part. Calling them not contemporary is I don't think that's a really great choice of words because they are contemporary. I mean, there are contemporary strategy games. They're just not big money makers right now.
Yeah, they're not the blockbusters.
Right, and 2K wants blockbusters.
Yeah.
So I mean, much as I would love to see them make a true XCOM successor, I understand why they don't.
They just need to make a BioShock Dota game. That would blow up.
That would be so cool.
Of course, he also goes on in that article to explain or to say why he thinks BioShock 2 was not a big success. So, which he blames on the release window.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah,
they probably could have done better at a different release window, but it would not have fixed the problems.
Right. And it was a good game. It just it's not like anywhere near the first one.
Yeah.
Also relevant to this discussion, what Relic's going to be revealing next month at Gamescom, is it, Dan?
I'm not sure exactly where they're making the announcement, but I mean they have long been said to be making an announcement in August, and I still have my fingers crossed for Homeworld 3, but they have been dropping references to a Dawn of War 3, which seems early for a new Dawn of War. I mean, there's only been two expansions to Dawn of War 2. Unless you count like the standalone Last Stand, which no, I mean that's just breaking off an existing part of the game. Josh is shaking his hand disapprovingly. Does not
no
count
way.
That.
I kind of like them being aggressive with release. I mean, it's honestly not a franchise that like. It's not a super long game. I mean, there's multiplayer obviously, but I mean you could play through the entirety of Dawn of War 2, including all the expansions, in a month if you wanted.
Oh,
to.
Yeah, easily.
You know.
Yeah. I think that if it is Dawn of War 3, my prediction right now is that it will be a free to play MMORTS.
Ooh,
that'd be cool.
I'm intrigued. Yeah.
So in that way, they wouldn't be directly competing with Dawn of War 2. But I would be disappointed to see that because. Only because I think it would be bad for the Dawn of War brand to have 3 come out so soon after 2. I think they would be better off to not call it Dawn of War 3, call it Dawn of War something. Although, God, those names are
like
getting so long.
Yeah,
the Mega Man.
And it's Warhammer 40,000, Dawn of War 2, Retribution, or you know, so, I mean, they're obviously not shy about long names. So
they just shorten it to Warham.
Yeah, Warhammer. But yeah, so
Picks.
So I am especially hoping for Homeworld 3. I would they've had the IP back for several years now. Just come on, Come on.
Also at Gamescom, the Valve saying they're going to announce a strategy game. Everyone's thinking Dota 2, including myself.
Well, Dota 2 is already announced.
They're going to show.
Yeah, they said they're going to show.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
Okay. A strategy game, yeah. It's Dota.
It has to be.
No doubt.
Yeah.
But what if it's not? I will be so sad. I'll wake up. I'll be crying. I won't know why.
Half-Life 3 is an RTS.
Valve is, yeah, Valve is not a company that gets ahead of itself, I think.
True.
I think now's a perfect time for some listener questions. And I guess I'd like to mention that this week's questions are sponsored by ModernWarfare3.com. Heading over to ModernWarfare3.com and you might be surprised.
Hello, Tony Steele from Kansas here. The question is, what game developers and publishers have you noticed to be the most open to taking questions from the gaming media and gamers? Which ones are not? And in connection to those two questions, how strong of a correlation is there between developers and publishers who are more open to the media and also produce quality games that are widely applauded by both media and player critics?
Yeah, one thing I will say, it really impressed me at Fanfare, actually, that I didn't mention that they talked about PlanetSide 2. They're going to be releasing their three-year plan for the game, everything they want to do, all the expansions, all the updates, and give that to the community, and then start taking their feedback and kind of decide, like, hey, okay, you guys think that this is more important, you'd rather see this feature earlier, and then they're going to move it up. You know, there's good and bad with that. There's two kind of developer philosophies. I would say that Blizzard is kind of the other end of the spectrum, which is very much like, we know what is good for you. not in like a pompous way, but, you know, they make games for a living. They're probably going to know what's best. And it speaks for themselves that they have made very good choices overall. But yeah, I was really interested by that idea of kind of putting the three-year plan out there, because that's something that SOE has had a lot of problems with, is players haven't agreed with a lot of their post-launch changes and thought that they've kind of quote-unquote ruined the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great to throw that out early, let the players get feedback before you invest a ton of development time into it.
I certainly think MMO developers have the biggest community challenge in terms of the media as well. Like, I mean, for Blizzard, we kind of think of them as it's rare for us to get like a huge exclusive from Blizzard these days, because they put their community first, and press is kind of second or third.
Yeah,
which is okay. I mean, they can do what makes sense to them, but just in terms of having games that are sort of living and ongoing, I mean, there's sort of some confusion between like the feedback they get from fans and customer service, and like there's just so many layers.
Yeah.
There of constant feedback from fans that they have to deal with and think about and ignore or listen to. And
yeah, and talking with Blizzard and stuff, just the amount of time that those guys spend on the forums, like reading and taking feedback, is incredible. But I mean, at the end of the day, you can't trust everything you read on the forums, and they know that, which is good, you know, because you want to get player feedback, get the, I guess, as a general pulse of what people think, and not get into the specifics of guy Y thinks that we should do X, Y, and Z, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and it's important to note that even. He's talking about which developers engage with their communities the most. A lot of that tends to be, you know, how tight a leash they're on. It's not you know, who's better at it. It's you know, the corporate ownership a lot of the time will prevent developers from getting out there and saying something.
Or manpower.
Yeah, or manpower, or you know, just PR philosophy. So it's not something I'm comfortable saying these guys are bad at. I mean, keep in mind that they all read the forums. Everybody reads them. Even if they are instructed not to make any posts, not to reply, they're all watching.
All right. Next.
That was almost like an intimidating at the end. They're all watching.
Well, no, it's an encouragement to go to developer forums, and even if they're not responding, I mean, don't go, why aren't you responding, developers? What's wrong? You know, why are you ignoring me? They're not ignoring you. They are generally, you know, just prohibited from posting, because for one thing, they don't want to get drawn into long discussions when they should be working on the game. Also, it's PR likes to control messaging about games. They don't want developers going on and saying, oh, yeah, we're working on this feature, effectively promising that, and then, it got cut. And, you know, so PR is a very very controlling over developers a lot of the time. So
it's their job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of independent developers will be much more freely outspoken.
Hey, PC Gamer crew, this is Alex, aka Warbringer 95. First off, I wanted to say that your last podcast episode was brilliantly awesome, and I really enjoyed it. Now, with my question, based on coming home from work and looking at the front page news on your website and thinking of all the things that have recently been talked about on the podcast and in other places, do you think there has ever been a better time to join the ranks of PC gamers worldwide if you are not one yet? Like console gamers that are on the fence maybe about jumping over, because I certainly think that this is probably the best time I've ever seen based on all the exciting changes that we've seen in the last few years.
We agree. I think
well,
we agree. I mean,
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Oh, really?
No, I think that, that you know, 10, 15 years ago it would have been a better time to get in, especially since back then the difference between console and PC was so great that the PC was just so demonstrably better on pretty much every level.
The introduction of CD-ROM, that's kind of the era you're talking about.
Yeah, well, even before that. You know, like at the time, just to go back to XCOM, at the time that came out, there was nothing comparable on consoles at all in terms of graphical quality. Actually, that was 94. I mean, it was up against like Nintendo. The NES, you know. So, I mean, I'd say that way back then was a great time to get into gaming. Now, you know, the playing fields are, I think, more level, but there are, you know, a ton of free games you get on PC you just can't get on consoles.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's accessibility, and you know, I love to sort of think that in terms of inflation and like the difference in cost that just buying a PC is cheaper than it's ever been. If you want to get in at entry level, it's you can do it for $700 and be good and be comfortable for a year or two.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, and I mean, just the amount of kind of free content that you can get—not just free to play games, but mods, total conversions. I mean, if you buy any Source game, you can play for like 6 months and just play something new all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that now is not a good time.
Yeah,
but is it definitely the best? I don't think so.
In recent memory, this is probably not recent memory, but in recent years, this is definitely the best. I mean, comparing the PC's power to the consoles, I mean, the consoles are just so dated at this point. I mean, within recent years, this is definitely the best time.
I think so. I mean, I follow a couple subreddits. There's a PC gaming subreddit on Reddit.com.
It's called r/gaming.
Yeah, I mean, r/gaming is full of PC gamers, which is awesome. But, I mean, just seeing that influence kind of grow or re-blossom, whatever you want to call it, is really nice. And just the curiosity of console gamers is growing. Like, mm-hmm. when I go over all the ARMA YouTube videos we posted, there's always, like, some guy in the comments is like, I've never heard of this game before. This looks awesome. I want to get in on that. Like, there are still experiences out here that you can't have on console whatsoever. I mean, MMOs, obviously. Dota is a big one. MOBA-style games. What term are we using these days for that?
MOBA.
Yeah.
Okay. Seems to be the one that everyone's pretty much adopted.
Multiplayer online battle arena.
Yes.
And just, I mean, think of StarCraft as a huge entry point. I mean, yeah. Just spectating StarCraft. I mean, yeah. I know there are console gamers out there don't own a PC, but there are StarCraft fans simply by watching, you know, and that's beautiful. That couldn't have happened, you know, in the last decade.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, I want to move on to playlists. It's that time again to tell me about what you plan.
Yay. Let me go first.
You can go first, Josh.
Yeah, take that, Lucas, Dan. No one cares what you guys played. No one really cares what I was playing either. I'm in a holy trinity of MMOs right now. Every single day, I can't decide which one to play and end up switching between all of them and never actually getting anything done. DCUO, WoW, and Lord of the Rings Online.
How do you have the time, Josh?
I make the time. Also, I sleep very, very little. Got my fifth level 30 in DCUO. So now I have 4 heroes and 1 villain. So I made a new villain immediately and started leveling him. Fib is his name.
What are his powers and theme?
It is, oh, I'm totally blank. Oh, fire, because I haven't done a tank yet, so I'm doing fire to play around with tanking. Acrobatics, because Batman is awesome. And, yeah. Oh, and mentoring Joker, because Joker is the coolest.
I know, all of that was probably a lie.
Why would you say that, Dan?
His name is Fib.
Oh, touche. a small lie, then.
Yes. Clever.
Just part of it was, then. And then, I've been doing arena with our old intern, Eric Belsas, which is good fun, because he has no arena gear whatsoever. And so he has a ton of PvE gear, which means that he dies in a second. So we're having fun, you know, grinding through it. And Lotro is fantastic. I hadn't played it a whole lot. I'd always been meaning to. Now I'm actually getting into it and kind of trying to follow the epic story that kind of goes alongside the story of the books / movies, whichever you prefer. Yeah, and having a really good time with that.
Good news, Bears. We're very glad to have you back from Nevada, Josh.
Thanks. Yeah, I know. I haven't been on the podcast in over a month, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, my mom will be very excited to hear my voice. Hi, Mom.
I'm just going to make jokes about, like, certain questions being from your mom.
Yeah.
That are nice to you. Anyway.
Please do.
Dan, we're going clockwise.
I've actually gotten back into Civ 5. For like a long time, I wanted to get back in and try out the new patches and everything, but it's like I would just like hover over it in my Steam list. I'm like, if I double click, I will be playing this for a long, long time. So I finally did it though. I finally got myself in, I'm liking a lot of the improvements that the patches have made. It's definitely more bug-free now than it ever has been, and the AI is still a little bit weak, but it definitely makes up for lack of quality with quantity of units that it throws at you. So it's, you know, it still puts up a good fight. The diplomacy AI is still kind of wonky. It's like last night I was fighting a war with the Aztecs and Montezuma. All of a sudden, like, you know, I wanted to make peace with him one turn. And he said no, like, you know, we can't negotiate, and, you know, we were pretty evenly matched. I just wanted to end the war, so I could get back to you know, harassing other people. So, like, the next turn, he's like, take all of my money, just make peace. Like, that was weird, but okay, I'll take it.
Can't complain.
Yeah,
free money.
It's really, really sucking me in again. And also looking at Reddit, you know, r/gaming, there have been a bunch of people that picked it up on the Steam sale, and, you know, countless anecdotes of getting stuck playing until 3-4 a.m. I was up until 2:30 last night playing.
Wow.
So
are you using mods, or is there new content, or are you just playing the same old, same old?
Same old. I do have the DLC, which adds a couple of new civilizations. They've got Vikings in there and Hawaiians.
Hawaiians?
I didn't know there were a strong international presence.
Yeah, well, it's not like Hawaiian. It's
Polynesian.
Polynesian. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
They have,
yeah,
like the shark tooth clubs and all that.
That's sweet.
But their capital is Honolulu, and then they've got then they have like Tonga and a bunch of the Pacific Islands.
What else
have I been playing? Still playing a little Frozen Synapse, although the challenges have slowed down. I need people to send me more challenges. I'm nowhere, Dan, on the Texas server. Bring it. And yeah, I finished up Red Faction Guerrilla a week or two ago, but I wasn't on last week. And that's about right.
Cool, Mr. Sullivan.
Well, I just started playing Portal 2 last night, which is sad, but,
yeah,
you know, have to do it sometime.
Have you had it spoiled for you?
No, I've actually...
That's good.
I mean, save for, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played it, the goose stuff.
Oh.
Like, yeah. But that's not really a spoiler per se.
It's all in screenshots and stuff. Yeah.
But I'm pretty good about keeping myself in the dark when I want
insulating
to.
Insulating your mind.
Yes. And then...
Do you need a co-op partner?
It's fun. It's like prom night. I'm the prettiest girl. I have people asking me left and right, Josh. I'm sorry. I'm taken.
Now, has whoever has spoken for that, have they played the co-op yet?
No, they have not.
Okay, good.
That's the best way.
Yeah, you got to take a virgin to that party.
That is good advice for life.
I'm glad I'm not Luke's date to this party now. I don't know what's going on, but I do not want to be involved.
Yeah. And then we've been playing some GoldenEye Source, haven't we, Evan?
Hell yeah. We're playing some Quake, though, before that.
That, too. See, we're doing the rounds on Quake. Quake 1 and Quake 3. Quake 2, I don't see the appeal so much.
Someone's disagreeing with you so hard right now.
Yeah, I mean...
Just listening, yeah.
I think Chris would disagree. He liked the railgun.
Man, getting back into Quake 3, it was... We actually hosted a LAN in our house. Wow,
we did.
Beautiful. It was me, you, Norman Chan, briefly, Chris, and...
our new housemate, Matt.
Matt, who works at tested.com with Norm. And yes. So a five-player game. And, man, that railgun is so satisfying, dude. When you hit somebody first shot, first second of seeing them, and you just
and you hear that, like,
them.
Bongo sound, like the, you know, the hit confirm.
I do.
The railgun in Quake, to me, is so much more satisfying than the electroshock rifle in Unreal. Just because it's so much snappier. It's like the response is, you click, you shoot. Whereas the electroshock like has that like quarter second delay that drives me nuts.
But Norm's a beast at that game. I heard legends. I heard talk. He's pretty good.
He's no pro.
He's no pro.
We can take him. He showed up. I'm gonna talk some smack. He showed up for two games, won by a couple points, and then he's like, I guess I still got it. And he steps away like, I'm retired again.
He knows how to quit when he's ahead.
And then I go on to win like 3 of 5. I'm just pissed off. He won them on this map I really don't like. It has this huge like fog all around it.
Yeah, that map was whack.
I'm just hearing a lot of excuses here. That's a lot.
QQing, you mean? Dan?
I'm just saying that is a lot of excuses.
I would go one on one with Norm any day. I would take him down.
And then also,
Norm hasn't been playing games. That's it too.
That's true.
He's
that's
been
true.
On like hiatus.
Because
he's applying for
Amazing
Race with Will Smith, which is hilarious.
Good luck to him.
They sent in a video submission to try and be on
some
the show.
Pretty awesome pictures.
Crazy
as well.
Talk. Yeah. Anyway.
Also, Dominion, the card game. You will hear this. Hear me talk about this with a man named Sean Day9 Plot.
Oh yeah.
But we've been hitting.
Yeah,
up
Lucas interviewed Day9. By the way, some guy involved with the StarCraft community, I guess. That's pretty cool.
Oh, just that little guy.
Like, interview of a lifetime. Wow.
Yeah, seriously. And that is a pretty fun game. How about yourself, Evan?
Yeah. GoldenEye Source, we put up 2 servers. We're still configuring them.
Mm-hmm.
So bear with us. But please come play with us. We're having regular events through our Steam group, steamcommunity.com/groups/PCGamer. Check those out. GoldenEye Source is amazing, if you haven't heard me talk about before. So it's probably the most faithful recreation multiplayer mod out there of the original game. I mean, all the original mechanics are preserved, every character, every weapon, every mode, paintball mode, every map and new maps based on the single player in the game. But atop that, like last night we're doing some crazy stuff. We actually have some developers that pop into our server every now and then of the mod itself. We put on Low Gravity, we're playing on Cradle. If you remember that map from the single player, it's like a big satellite dish with all these isolated bridges, like these big long white bridges, and Low Gravity, Rocket Arena.
That's
so
awesome.
So I'm sad that I missed that.
All this air strafing and like, you know, shooting Boris, who in game kind of looks like a Hawaiian Harry Potter with rockets. Man, so good, so good. Please come play with us, guys. It's free. I mean, like probably one of the best. Just, you know, if you like Counter-Strike and that kind of game, it's built in the Source Engine, obviously. It just feels so similar and so comfortable. It's not as twitchy and crazy as
games
like... Yeah,
it's more like fun-oriented.
Yeah, it's comfortable. It's really, I never, like, rage when I'm playing that game.
I was coming close last night on License to Kill. Some of those shots,
Yeah, I mean, Man with the Golden Gun mode is in there. That's
really fun.
That's, I mean, just the feeling of... Everyone else on the level has a normal weapon, or you know, maybe a shotgun or something, and you have a pistol that has you can take somebody down in a single shot if you make that shot. Long reload, great feeling.
And everyone can see where you are.
Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to talk about it over the past couple of weeks, but I went to play Tribes Ascend a few weeks ago. I want to get a chance to just kind of briefly go over my impressions about that. Just catch people up. Tribes Ascend being created by the guys that did Global Agenda. sort of a shooter MMO down in Alpharetta, Georgia. Hi-Rez Studios is what they're called, and it's free to play, which is really exciting. Going to be built around microtransactions. The microtransactions going to be focused on these things called loadouts. So loadouts, you can think of those as almost like, I mean, they're what you're carrying. They're the two weapons you have, the explosive you have, the pack you have. Sort of, they're classes, roughly. But they're more nuanced, I guess. So, you know, they have great admiration for League of Legends. That's kind of the business model they're going to be doing. So I'd imagine they're going to be rotating, like, hey, these five loadouts are free this week. Try them out. And then they're not free, you know, the next couple weeks, and you have to buy them if you want to hold on to them. If you want to, you know, be a sniper or be a engineer with a specific loadout. So, you know, some people are upset about that. I think it's fine. I think it makes sense. And they're also going to be selling customization options.
Do you know how many loadouts there are going to be?
From what I played, there were about like 10 or so in there right now. I mean, they're going to be adding tons, I'm sure. I mean, in the preview we're publishing in our next issue, Batman's going to be on the cover. Mr. Stapleton. Very exciting. Batman Arkham City. There's at least a dozen weapons. I mean, they're going to be adding tons and tons more. I think at the same rate that League of Legends does with champions, potentially. There's no reason not to. But in terms of the game itself, my impressions, I can't go into too much detail, but skiing works. I mean, skiing is what you've wanted to be. I think it's the most accessible it's ever been in Tribes. If you don't know what skiing is in Tribes, do you have a jetpack? Everybody has a jetpack. Skiing is, you know, this process of moving along the ground. And what you're doing is you're using you're gliding up hilltops, and then you're sliding down them. You're skiing down them to get momentum, and then you carry that momentum over more hilltops. So it's sort of like you're chaining momentum together over multiple hills and smaller hills. And it's just the process of trying to maintain that by like proper jetpack use and whatnot. It's a way of moving fast. And this was originally something that was a glitch in Tribes, and you know, they've obviously embraced it as a real game mechanic. It works. But it's also not so easy that you can't tell the difference between a player that knows how he's skiing, like just seeing how fast and how skillful somebody's moving through the environment. Obviously, I was playing with the developers. They know what they're doing. You can tell the difference. I think the difference is just like it's much easier to initiate a ski, which was kind of what was frustrating to me as a young player in Tribes 1 and Tribes 2. Like, I want to be like that guy, knows what he's doing, and how do I do that? The weapons are great. Pretty much every original weapon from Tribes and Tribes 2 is represented and identical. Spin Fuser, you know, still the mainstay of Tribes combat, where you're leading a target with an explosive weapon. You're just trying to get that splash damage in a general area where they're going to be in like 0.3 seconds as they're moving forward.
I was just taught about the blue plate special. That's what they call
Spin Fuser. Pretty much. Still like such a sport-like game, I think. And it's still centered around Capture the Flag. The modes they showed me were Capture the Flag and this one called Rabbit, which is like free-for-all Capture the Flag. Remember that from Tribes 2? So there's a flag. You're trying to hold it for the longest as part of a single match. So somebody drops it. You pick it off. You run off with it. It's like Keep Away.
Yeah.
What I wasn't so impressed with were... I only saw two maps. They're probably going to be launching with at least four. And the bases in these maps, you know, again, I didn't see the whole roster, but the bases, I'm a big fan of bases and Tribe. I just love the process of, like, yes, there's this athletic multiplayer gameplay if you want to play outside, but, like, maybe next round I want to sort of take a break and just hang out in my generator room, play defense, and that's just a whole different role, and that's kind of relaxing and fun and different. The bases that I saw weren't necessarily really intricate and detailed. They're kind of simple hallways and things like that. And I was hoping there'd be like some big expansive areas and more complex. So hopefully that'll be the case in the other maps I didn't see. The other thing were I didn't see transport vehicles again. Like, you know, I didn't see every map. I didn't see every piece of content, but I saw a speeder bike and a tank, and those are cool. But I loved being a taxi driver. I mean, we were talking about this a bit ago with Planetside, like just being that role in a match and like being like, well, I'm not going to fight this game. I'm just going to drive people around. That's fun. And, you know, I think Tribes players still want that to be the case for that to be represented.
Yeah, I actually really like the Age of Empires, or sorry, the League of Legends model, which I guess is also kind of similar to what Age of Empires is doing. So I'm hoping that they use that kind of you buy chunks of it at a time model, It makes so much more sense to me than the kind of the earlier ones, and like I think Battlefield Heroes still does this, where you basically rent weapons.
Yeah.
Like if I'm paying money, I want something that I'm going to keep. I don't want to have that go away after a few days, makes me feel pressured to play a free to play game during that time that I just paid to do that. So like if I can go in to Tribes Ascend and spend $50 and get basically a full game's worth of content, then that's a win. That's great. Yeah. I mean, as long as things aren't priced too high.
Exactly.
Yeah, and if you're the kind of person that only likes to play like a medic and a sniper, I mean, you could get it for a lot cheaper than $50 bucks. And
yeah, if you're a dedicated guy to one class, you're getting away with a steal there.
I do think it's the kind of, it's a popular franchise, but it does sort of need that free-to-play entry point at this point. Like, when you're up against, and they're going to be launching in 2011, that's still the plan. And interestingly, at this time, they don't really have a clear plan for publishing on console. You know, initially, people were sort of concerned, well, how do you do Tribes on an Xbox? And, you know, is that going to compromise the PC? They've sort of, like, shelved, as I understand, their plans for console, which is kind of cool for us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I just want more people playing Tribes. I mean, I don't want it to be framed as some sort of, it's this high-skill game, and, you know, Just I don't want there to be any discouragement from people from trying that, because it's so different from all these grounded multiplayer games that are very military. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think Capture the Flag is a lost art. You know, it's not something that any game, I mean, Call of Duty has it. It's not something any game is really built from the ground up to represent and honor. Because, and I miss that. You know, I mean,
and there are a lot of free to play shooters right now, but how many of them have vehicles?
Actually, on that topic, can I ask you guys a question? Do you like vehicles in shooters?
It depends on the shooter.
In a big, expansive environment. I like them in Battlefield Bad Company, sure. I like them in Arma. I mean, that's a huge world. It's got to be a big world, and got to be at least 32 players or something, I guess.
I always dislike them just because if you are the person that's like lagging behind the guy in front of you, he gets the vehicle and drives off, and you're just like, so what do I do? Wait for another vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, that's a matter of player behavior, and you sort of have to design to discourage that. But it's a problem in Battlefield.
Battlefield definitely has that problem with people stabbing each other to get jets.
Yeah. I'm going to take this helicopter and use it my personal vehicle and then throw it at the earth like a candy wrapper.
Delicious candy.
Cool. So, you know, I'm feeling very positive about Tribes. It looks beautiful. I mean, you guys saw the trailer.
Yeah.
Unreal 3, but damn. I mean, the lighting, I think there's probably some inspiration from Halo there, like just how bright the environments are, but I like that.
Yeah, nothing wrong with
nothing,
that.
Yeah, nothing at all.
Yeah, and bright colors in a shooter just makes it easier to see what you want to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Bingo. Other than that, played some Puzzle Agent 2. It's not that great. Would recommend skipping it. Almost done with Magic of the Gathering. And still more TF2.
Wait, again, nothing wrong with that.
Magic the Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012.
Okay. Well, there's been like a bunch of different Magic ones recently.
Were there? Well, I think they're all just expanding. Are you looking at like Steam?
Well, there's Magic Tactics.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say that's inferior to Duels of the Planeswalkers, just because having the cards is truer to the game.
Yeah. It's the best card game on Steam. We can say that. All right, we got to wrap this up so we can ship a magazine for all y'all. But thanks for joining us. Send us your comments and questions to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 877-404-1337, extension 724. We like short questions. I'm going to say that and let that hang a little bit. Shorter the better, simpler the better. We love your praise and all, but, you know.
Okay. Straight, concise, and to the point.
Absolutely. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for joining us. And actually, stay tuned. Lucas is going to interview one of the commenting kings of StarCraft, one of the most entertaining guys in PC gaming, Sean Day9 Plot. Stick around for that awesome interview.
He is the man, and as I told Josh, I was on a natural high after interviewing him. It was awesome.
Understandable. All right, stick around, and you'll hear it in a few moments.
Lucas has a man crush. Deschamps. I'm Lucas. Nice to internet meet you.
It is equally awesome to internet meet you, Lucas.
I'm glad. Let's see. Can you hear me okay and everything?
Yeah, yeah. And do I sound crisp and nasty?
Yes. Oh.
Perfect. Exactly as I wanted it.
And I got my recording going. Perfect. Cool. So first off, happy belated birthday.
Oh, hey, thank you. I'm now 12 years old.
It's a very exciting time, prepubescent school. So I guess to get started, what's it like being a part of the rise of esports in North America that we've seen over the past couple of years, I'd say?
Well, it's the esports history has been a very, very odd one, I guess I would say, because there's been so many points in time where all the signs have looked good, but it hasn't really happened. And I always kind of feel like whenever there's something, you know, like the rise of esports or something like that, what happens is people look to all these signals like, okay, a lot of people enjoy watching it and the players are really dedicated and the depth of play is really incredible. Is it going to happen yet? Is it here? Did I miss it? You know, and this sort of, these sorts of questions. And in reality, there always comes a point where some person or some organization really has to push it forward. An interesting example of this is poker, where poker was, you know, very, very popular United States wide and worldwide. But I only know the statistics for the United States better. Something where like 40 million Americans played poker on a regular basis casually. But it was the work of one man, Peter Lipscomb, who popularized everything with the World Poker Tour and created this really nice presentation method that made it accessible to large audiences. So in regards to the StarCraft explosion, I honestly think that the biggest reason that it's really taking off is the ease of communicating and delivering content with current media technology. Such as social forums that have developed, being able to have things like social communities with Twitter or Facebook. And then all of a sudden, video streaming is now really, really easy.
Oh, yes.
It was not quite so easy right when I started. Quite frankly, it was somewhat of a bitch. But the fact of the matter is that let's say that there is some grandmaster player who's phenomenal, who one day decides, you know what, I'm going to start giving lessons to master level players all publicly. He can do that. He can just get the software, 1, 2, 3, click. Hey, you're streaming. Thank you, XSplit. And all of a sudden, this amazing content is being delivered out all over the internet. So it's very, very cool to see that happen.
Yeah.
Kind of answers your question.
Do you think that's like up the balls in Blizzard's court, kind of, for them being the ones to like push it more mainstream? Or do you think someone like outside of Blizzard will be doing
I mean, Blizzard's in somewhat of an awkward spot when it comes to that sort of thing, because they are game developers. They're incredible game developers, as you'll note. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, we're going to make a game that's going to be a successful esport, and here StarCraft II's been out over a year, and the strategies are continuing to evolve, and things are continuing to stay cool. But to actually organize a league and then to actually stream that league is so hard.
Yeah.
So I'm not at all surprised that you know, they're not taking part in it. But the fact remains that Blizzard is extremely supportive of those who are trying. So, I mean,
for sure.
I actually think it's more of like everyone's responsibility to make it grow. That there's always all those discussions that go on, like, are video games bad? What does it mean about this and that with my child's health and my health as I'm playing? And it's kind of funny because a lot of people are talking about all the areas around video games, but not that many people are actually talking about the video games. People are talking about, does it affect your social abilities? What does it say about you as a person if you play games a lot? How does it affect your ability to do other mental tasks? No one's actually sitting down and saying, well, what do you do in StarCraft? That's actually surprisingly uncommon to see happen.
I wish I would see that more in the mainstream media. That would be very nice. So what do you think the state of esports is right now?
State of esports is in such a wonderful place where people are putting out more content than the average user can actually handle. So that means that all these people making content are suddenly having to battle one another to make their content better.
Good for the audience, I say.
And this is great for the audience because it's just pushing it into an area where suddenly everyone's just going to be getting exactly what sort of content they really, really want. Mm-hmm. And the numbers are so good that people can run these sorts of experiments and do these kinds of tests and run around. It's not like some all-in play or anything. So it's the one thing that I guess is a little problematic is that it's somewhat difficult to bring the new user in.
Yeah, I agree.
For something like, and when I say that, I'm not even referring to the game itself or the community. I'm referring more so to the medium of internet television as being a little bit of the bottleneck. Contrast it with regular television. If MTV creates a reality show, they simply need to place it at a primetime hour, mm-hmm. and suddenly people are now watching that show and talking about it. It's very easy to get someone who's unfamiliar with it access to it. But sure. With StarCraft, sites like Team Liquid have amazing indexes of the streams that are going on. Same with a site like wellplayed.org. Or if you go to Reddit, you can see streams that are getting upvoted and get access to it. But if you're a new user, you'll never stumble across it. You kind of have to seek
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
In my life, I, especially when I was young in high school, got ostracized quite a bit.
Boo.
You know, because they're like, ooh, StarCraft, ooh, isn't that weird? You're playing StarCraft. Isn't that game 3 years old? And it was a reasonable thing, I guess, you know, for someone to get really defensive and be like, shut up, it's cool. Or to just sort of like shrug it and be like, well, just ignore him. This will all be over soon. But I got tired of that really quickly because I just thought to myself, damn it, this is so awesome. Like, I cannot believe how incredible this is. I mean, I still even remember when I stayed up late to watch Zelos play against Yellow in the Olympus Star League finals. And at that point in time, 90% of best of fives were won by the person who won the first game. Huh. And Yellow won the first game, and I was rooting for Zelos, and I wanted Zelos to win so badly. And he managed to pull it off, and it was just this epic, epic moment for me. And I was just like, this is so awesome. How can anyone say that that incredible, pleasurable rush of emotion and experience could be a bad thing? So whenever someone would be like, oh, StarCraft is dumb, aren't you a loser for playing it? I would literally just go, dude, it's actually so cool, man. And I would almost pretend as though they didn't even say anything negative to me. And interestingly, people would start to go, oh, huh. And then it carried over to college where, you know, there would be Star League finals. And I would go down to the academic end. I would reserve a projector room, and I would show the Star League finals. And the first time I did that, a good amount of people showed up, like 50 people showed up. But then when the really huge finals between Jadong and Call came up, mm-hmm. I told like the whole school and like blasted the school email with permission. And like started running around with like flyers being like, come to the Galileo Auditorium and watch it. And I rented the largest auditorium in the school, and like 300 or 400 people showed up.
That's awesome.
And it was this awesome event. And I actually got a microphone, and so that way I could do commentary when I was there. And I just remember thinking, like, this is so awesome. This is so cool that all these people are getting into it. So damn it, more people need to do that sort of thing.
I wish
too.
My college did that.
Yeah, man, all you got to do is have one obsessive nerd there, and boom. So that honestly was one of the big pushes for the After Hours Gaming League that I was, you know, talking to you a little bit about before the podcast, that mm-hmm. by bringing in these mainstream companies to play and trying to get that into the mainstream media, it's an opportunity for a lot of people who would not be involved in esports at all, who maybe heard StarCraft offhand, but associated it with, you know, World of Warcraft and said, oh yeah, I don't play those MMO games. It's suddenly a chance for those sorts of people to realize, whoa, maybe if all those people at Google and Microsoft and Facebook and Twitter and Zynga and Yelp and Dropbox, maybe if they are playing it in a huge league, maybe that's something that I could look into. So I'm really excited to see the potential future in that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So each company, I assume they'll be promoting it themselves too, trying to drum up cheerleaders for their team.
Yes, the teams themselves are like really, really excited about it and and are already getting pumped up, you know, because it's a lot of fun, because it's, in all honesty, it is a single instance of just your casual corporate league, like a baseball league.
Yeah,
like it's something that all these companies are doing because they think it would be fun. Like, it was originally Facebook saying, you know, we have some friends at Google that kind of wanted to do a Facebook versus Google, like, for fun match. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we could expand this. And then the AHGL was born. and now it's also a chance to get, like, the sort of professional production quality put alongside it, which makes it even more fun, you know. And the fact that they're encouraged to get their team shirts on, and the fact that it's like that we're making sure that, you know, the organization is really, really rigorous. I think the worst thing that can ever happen to just a fun casual activity is just sort of where it falls by the wayside, because I don't want to say people get lazy, but there's no structure. That's the word I want to look for. Mm. You know, like if you say let's play a casual, you know, movie night, let's do something like that, but then all of a sudden people kind of forget and get busy and no one's really pushing the organization, so
got to get those brackets. That's what they need.
Yeah. Get brackets for movie night.
So if you were, say you were calling the shots at Blizzard, what would you put the most focus on for StarCraft II? For instance, like, would you pay most attention to the community or balance or working on the expansions? Like, what would you focus on?
I don't know. I genuinely do not know. Yeah, it's kind of tough. You know,
I'm glad I can challenge you with that question.
Well, see, it's interesting, because let me stop just sitting here and saying a whole lot. If you talked to me a couple of months ago, I think I would probably have some more questions or more concerns and more things I would talk about. But it's kind of amazing how carefully Blizzard has thought through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, take like the bonus pool that exists, where every like 30 minutes you get a bonus point. Mm-hmm. And whenever you play a game, you win the points from the game and you get some bonus points. And people were saying things like, this is so dumb because it means that over time the average points increase. So in a game like chess, you can say something like, I'm an 1800 ELO chess player, and that always means the same thing. But in StarCraft, it doesn't. If you're a 2000 ranked masters player, well, was it at the start of the season or was it at the end of the season? Because that's so different, and people dislike that. Yeah. But then someone at Blizzard pointed out that the biggest curse that happens in any online ladder is inactivity, where someone will play, get to the top, and then disappear.
Very true.
And if you create this bonus pool, it doesn't reward activity directly. If you just play some, you'll get the bonus points. If you play a ton, you'll get the same number of bonus points, because again, it's like 1 point every 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what this means is that all the active players rise to the top of these divisions. So you always know where you're benchmarked against other people who are actually playing right now.
Yeah.
And I heard that and I was like, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. There you go. All right, cool.
Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, the flam, flam, flam. So I suppose if I were at Blizzard and I was forced to do something, the one thing that I would probably say is to think about more ways to get the people from 2v2s into 1v1s. Mm. And as you say that, you're like, well, that's what you try to do with your dailies. And I'm like, yes, but I was forced to answer the damn question. You know, like, because, I mean, very smartly, Dustin Browder said, you know, we want people to play the single player and say, that was fun. Let me see what it's like interacting with other people. So let me dabble in a free-for-all so I can maybe be left alone. And then after that, let me try some 4v4s so I can have some allies to work with. Mm-hmm. And then let me try to back down to 3v3s and then down to 2v2s. And then maybe if I'm really enjoying the competitive environment of 2v2s, then I'll step into 1v1. because even though 1v1 is the heart and soul of esports, it is a very daunting thing for a lot of casual competitors. I mean, the interesting thing is that when most people play 15 to 20 games, all that feeling of it being daunting is suddenly sort of evaporated. But it's that first step that can feel so scary, almost like getting into a cold swimming pool.
Yeah. Got to jump in.
So, I mean, that is one thing that I think is a struggle for really any competitive game. But again, what's so nice is that there's all these great streams of people, you know, pushing out cool content, you know, like players like Huck just streaming their 1v1s, or even people like Mr. Bitter making shows about themselves trying to improve at 1v1.
Are there any genres that you think need more attention in esports? Like genres you feel have potential to have analysis like StarCraft, or get people as excited as they do for StarCraft?
Well, Blizzard's genius because they actually designed the game to be very observable. And observability is always the biggest struggle with esports games. Like, Counter-Strike 1.6. Holy shit. What an incredible game. What a delight to play in and to see tournaments in. And the intensity that happens in that. But my God, is that a hard match to watch? Because you have 10 different first-person perspectives. You have an overhead view of where everyone's moving. And then you also have these, like, just long shots of hallways and people shooting each other, but it's kind of hard to get the sense of how good the aim is doing.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about, like, accessibility for the viewer, essentially?
Yeah, and that's why I'm really excited that Street Fighter IV and a lot of fighting games are starting to really get a big stronghold.
Yeah.
Is that I always felt like the fighting game community had a little bit of decentralization going on. I mean, there was, you know, forms like Shoryuken, but, you know, Team Liquid for StarCraft was, like, such a huge centerpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Like, such a big hub. But now with streaming coming out, you can tune to Street Fighter 4, and look at this. It is complete information. There's one screen that everyone's looking at. How delightful to be able to watch that. There's not even any need for a camera control. It just happens. So it's really great. So regarding genres, I wonder, the thing that is so great about web television as a medium is the fact that it levels the playing field. It's kind of like Amazon, who was writing about how, like, a huge amount of their revenue is generated from the long tail, these books that very few people will buy. But because there are thousands and thousands of books that a few people will buy, it turns into a ton of people. And all of a sudden, StarCraft, yeah, it might not have the 4 million required audience to get on an NBC or a CBS.
Mm-hmm.
It does have the hundreds of thousands that can support it via web TV. So I feel like there's a lot of games out there that have yet to be explored that I just think could be really fun, cool viewing experiences. I mean, trying to think of something I was watching earlier. Oh yeah, like Super Puzzle Fighter.
I would definitely watch that at pro level.
Yeah, like Super Puzzle Fighter is so kick-ass. And that's the sort of game that, you know, if someone said there's going to be a Super Puzzle Fighter tournament with the best players in the world and you can just tune in here, I'd be like, I'm in. I mean, honestly, I would dabble in that. There's a lot of those arcade-style fun puzzly games, and I just think it's up to a lot of the people who have the interest to just sort of step up and say, well, I think people would be interested in it. Let me do it. I actually would you can consider this podcast as a call to action for people who just have interest in respective games that, given the media landscape right now, you can create something that forms a market itself. You don't have to ask yourself, how big is the Puzzle Fighter market? You can say, no, this is so awesome that I can get people in to watch it. And Day 9 is at least one of them.
I would be right there beside you.
Yeah, baby.
That would be awesome. Like a best of move, best of five.
Yeah, like who? Why not? Where's the DDR tournament that's filmed? Where's the Beatmania 2DX tournament
that I want? Oh, man. getting my hopes and dreams up, Sean. This is crazy.
Yeah, you know, like I'll even say another one that I beg you to include. Speed Demos Archive.
Oh, yes.
Speed Demos Archive. Speed runs. Why is there no speed run tournament? Why is there not something like the game of the month is going to be Sonic 2, and at the end of the month, we're going to see speed runs of the game. And whoever has the lowest time, who clocks in, gets surprise.
So I guess on the last sort of esports specific questions, were there any changes Blizzard made that you really disagreed with? Like something they tweaked and you're like, oh, that's just, that doesn't serve the community at all.
Yes. The big one that I have said before is that Zerg doesn't feel Zergy to me. It's more of a design thing that I'm griping on because, like, narratively, the Zerg are supposed to be the swarm that has overwhelming numbers of tiny units, and it's this relentless onslaught. And instead, you know, there's... They have these slow-ass mud units called Roaches. These slow-ass Hydras that can't do anything. You know,
yeah, and that was depressing.
Yeah, and if you think about it, though, the game still has remarkable balance and incredible depth. It's not like Zerg is a bad race from an objective standpoint. It's that I miss the Zerg from Brood War.
Same.
A bit.
I miss the Lurkers so very much.
Oh, God, I fucking miss Lurkers.
That was, like, Roaches don't fill that void in my heart from the lack of Lurkers.
Yeah, it's kind of... I'm getting emotional. But I will also note, though, I've always really been interested to see how the game would play out if extended to 300 food.
That's interesting.
I know that a reason that Blizzard did not do that is because processors can't handle it, especially in, like, 4K and
stuff. I didn't think of that.
If you have, like, 1,200 food worth of units on either... on both sides, you know,
all circlings,
and like one guy like has a carrier and it like shoots out its interceptors, and then someone morphs in a mothership and everyone's computer tanks, you know, like I get that. But in it, okay, how do I say that? So in any strategy game, that has resource management. Resource management is the central thing. So in a sense, the units that you build are not what you're actually making. What you're actually doing is using those units as a representation of how you are allocating your resources. A lot of people will ask the question, what about having unit X in that battle? I get this all the time in the daily. People will say, well, a Raven... wouldn't a Raven have been helpful there? And I always kind of have to say, well, it would be great if a Raven existed at the time, but a Raven costs a lot of gas specifically. So investing in a Raven eats into your ability to get other things. And again, it all comes back to this notion of resources. And I mean, like, I always think the best example of it is the most traditional Protoss early expand against Zerg. You get a lot of gas early on, and then you spend all of it on sentries, which cost lots of gas. This leaves you with a lot of minerals left over that you use to take an expansion. Are sentries necessarily good or bad units? That question is actually meaningless. The answer is that the allocation of resources allows me to get sentries and an expansion up, and that entire strategy is what is good. And the reason I bring up this whole discussion is that in Brood War, as a result, especially when all the strategies became developed, it was all based around taking expansions and denying expansions and preventing people from using expansions efficiently. Yet in StarCraft II, it's very easy to get as many workers as you're going to want all game long pretty early on.
True.
You'll hit a point, you know, especially with Zerg, where you can get, you know, 75 workers pretty
it ain't no thing.
yeah. I have three hatches. I have three queens. Boom. 10 minutes. 75 drones. Done making drones. Watch. As a result, this means that in a lot of circumstances, it's the three bases that are big, but then like the fourth and fifth and sixth base don't feel like they have as much weight to them. Mm-hmm. And again, design-wise and balance-wise, as we can see, StarCraft II is still this like amazing, cool, dynamic game that has all sorts of interesting stuff going on.
Oh yes.
But I personally loved how scary taking an expansion felt in Brood War, and I loved how carefully you had to plan that out and how important it was to have that sort of planning, and how every game that you'd win against a weaker player was essentially you just punishing him for not being able to time his expansions properly or defend his expansions properly.
It is always so depressing for one player to see a fresh expansion just sniped in an instant.
Yeah.
Who do you think are the players to watch right now? I heard you talk about MMA and Slush on the UK podcast. Are there any that have like recently gotten your attention?
Well, I think everyone's attention has been nabbed by Huck as of late, largely because Huck won DreamHack and then won the Home Story Cup, both of which were super stacked tournaments. And he did so by taking out a lot of tip-top-of-line Koreans.
I have mad respect for that man using Protoss and being in first. That is cool.
Oh, yeah. That's super awesome. I mean, and the reason that Huck really, really excites me, and actually I've talked about this a lot with Slush as well, is that
the way comeback factor, sort of?
It's more the aggression factor and the way that they do it. So attacking is just this good thing to do. You should attack. Because, you know, it will force your opponent, or you can kill them, yeah, you can do damage, blah, blah, blah. Strategically, the reason attacking is good is because it shapes down the amount of options that you need to deal with. Like, for instance, let's say that there is a strategy where I build four command centers before I build a barracks.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, this is now a new epic expanding strategy, just to get the extremes out there to make the point clear. Mm-hmm. There's this strategy where you build four command centers before you build anything else. Any early attack will kill this strategy. But the correct way to state it strategically is that, oh yeah, you should always do a timing attack at 8 minutes because you suddenly will always win against someone who does this four expand strategy. So you don't need to plan against that anymore. Mm-hmm. If you didn't do this timing attack at 8 minutes, suddenly an element of your strategy would require you to suddenly get a huge amount of resources to deal with his four bases worth of resources. So, in fact, a lot of people are always wondering, how do I determine what strategy he's doing to be able to battle it best? And interestingly, one of the most common answers is, we'll just do an attack earlier on that kind of prevents him from even getting that strategy going in the first place. So obviously this attacking is at a fundamental level a good for thing for you to do as a player. Mm-hmm. However, what's problematic is that if you time your attack poorly, you just get boned. You get wrecked super hard.
I know all about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no worse feeling than thinking, all right, I just got my stim. I just got my combat shield.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and you move out and like 10 banelings and 100 zerglings, sweep around, kill all your shit, go into your natural, and you're dead. And you're like, damn it! So what happens is, through the hundreds of thousands of games of StarCraft that are getting played, people are sculpting out all these different situations, and they're hitting these equilibrium points that we call timing pushes. Which is a time to attack where I get all those benefits of attacking, like specifically cutting out certain strategies of what I need to worry with. Mm-hmm. And I also don't fucking die. Yes! You know, like,
that's
so
optimal right there.
Yeah. And one of the most notable ones is the handful of Marines, 3-tank, 1 medevac push from Terran, right when you get Stim. Like, this is a very, very common timing push. It's right when Zerg's really wanting to build his drones and you mess with them. And you can still lose the attack, but as long as you don't lose too much, you're in great shape. But that would contrast this with a player like Huck. Huck still does not really do these robotic time. Or actually, let me cut Huck out of the mix. So you get a player who's like a top master, a low grandmaster, and what does he do? He downloads a replay of Empire Kos, sees the timing that he does, and just does it blindly. Boom! This player's now good. Let's take an example of someone who can copy and suddenly be playing at a grandmaster level. Hey, I do that. Oh, are you kidding me? There's so many strategies that I don't come up with that I just steal. Specifically, the build I'm talking about is this great Hellion straight into Marine push that I saw Empire Kos do. I've been doing it. Hey, why does it work? Not entirely sure. I have some theory, but what do you know? I'm able to take out Grandmasters.
No shame in it. There's no shame in it at all.
Yeah, I will happily embrace. And if someone says, dude, how do you beat that? I'll be like, I don't know. I've been doing it for a few days. But Huck just starts moving out and attacks and just pulls back. And you'll watch a stream and he'll move out and he'll attack and he'll just lose all his shit. Like a few months ago, he'll just move out and he'll lose everything. He'll be like, oh, God, he threw that game away. And then he'll move out and he'll be doing good damage, and then he'll just lose everything again. And it's like, you know, like he's just losing so many dumb games. And that's what happens when you're over-aggressive, as any player who's ever dabbled in a new strategy has learned. You lose so much when you're over-aggressive. What is incredibly impressive to me about Huck is that he's just grounded out, ground games for so long, just grind. And then he hits this point where all of a sudden he has this phenomenal depth of knowledge of when he can move out, but he also pulls back. A few months ago, you'd see him move out with a Zealot and two sentries and try to just deal as much damage as he could, but he'd lose it all and then be at a disadvantage all game long. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, you see him move out, throw down two force fields, kill a queen, and then immediately retreat again. And it's just like, whoa. And he'll just do weird things. Like, he'll move out with, like, three sentries, and that's it. And he'll kill off four Zerglings and then pull back home. And you're like, whoa. And now what this means is that the way that Huck's style kind of works is it's like this momentum. It's like he'll lose and 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 lose. And now all of a sudden, he's terrifying to play against because he knows all these weird things. Now all of a sudden, it's not just, I always do the push at 8 minutes. It's like, okay, 30% of the time I'll push at 7 minutes. But based on what you're doing, 5% of the time I'll wait till 8 minutes and 30 seconds. And then 40% of the time I'll push at 9 minutes. And it's this huge amount of variance. In other words, he has incredible skill and incredible knowledge of when to do those timing attacks. And that's honestly one of the reasons why I'm really excited about a player like Slush as well, is because Slush, too, plays around with so much insane aggression that he has these funky timings that he messes with.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's like timing Nirvana, like a sixth sense.
Timing Nirvana, yeah.
Now, do you think we'll ever see the return of the Reaver or the Defiler? Because those are like such fan favorite units that I'm surprised they weren't in Wings of Liberty.
Yeah, I think Blizzard will likely do more things that have space control in them, because that's how I really view the Defiler and the Reaver, mm-hmm. as these units that would lock down space. Also similarly the Lurkers and the Scourge and Spider Mines. That there were these units that it was like, you shall not ever pass. You are not allowed in, period. Like, that sort of thing was their defining characteristic. How you would get something like where you'd have a ramp with four lurkers and you dark swarm it. And how many units do you have? Infinity? That's fine. I have dark swarm. It would secure this expansion. It was an extremely thin defense, but boom, it was there. In StarCraft II, there's not as much of that space control. If you have eight roaches defending your ramp from his push, if his push is twice the size, then you need twice as many roaches, and that's all there is.
Yeah, like I guess I was hoping to see more use of the mothership when StarCraft first came out, just because of the vortex being a cool, like, if you're there and bunched up, I'm gonna punish you for it.
Yeah
there's just not enough of that. Now, do you think there are any strategies that have yet to be discovered, like any builds? Or do you think it all literally comes down to timing, like doing this 5 seconds earlier?
Oh, well, I honestly think that that's the same question. I think it all does come down to timing, and as a result, there's a lot of builds that are still yet to be explored. Like, for instance, in terms of a simple descriptor, there's a lot of builds that people will view as being the same. You know, for instance, there's the three racks, expand, and then get medivacs really fast. That's what Terrans largely have had as their fundamental structure against Protosses. Mm-hmm. But then you look at it, and okay, there's some players who get the factory before they get any tech labs. So they're just making Marines out of these three barracks. And then they get combat shield before the stim. So they get the medevacs extremely quickly, and they can harass really quickly. I'm describing Startail Bombers style. Then you see players, you know, like Phoenix I've seen, get two tech labs and a reactor before he gets his factory. And he starts the upgrades before he gets his factory. And he's moving out aggressively in the middle of the map. Or then you even get players who play pretty standardly, and they get one tech lab up, and they're making Marauders out of that. The other two barracks are making Marines. And they just get the stim upgrade, and whenever they can afford it, they get a factory. There's even some players who just completely cut Marauders out of the mix to accelerate everything a little bit more with just Marines. So, I mean, there's all this play that exists in these seemingly identical kind of build orders.
Now, do you have any words of wisdom for aspiring shoutcasters?
The biggest one is to just do it.
Nike style.
Yeah, I mean, that is very, very important to note, because, like, I mean, I think with most activities, people like to just sit and sculpt their craft quietly until they feel like it's really good and then release it. And I think that is the exact opposite of what you should do. You should release something that's terrible and just do another one and just do another one. Like, my first dailies are painful for me to rewatch because I'm awkward and I'm not relaxed. Like, I like to be jokey and sort of, you know, have fun when I, like, you know, talk. But back then I was like, all right, guys, let's do a little analysis, you know, take it or leave it. We're going to see if we can do something that works for everyone here. It was just doofy.
Very academic.
Yeah, and sort of stilted. Like, I was trying to be cool. Like, yeah, I don't want to be goofy, man. They don't think I'm cool, man. Maybe I should say a curse word and be cool, you know, like. And then over time I was like, okay, that doesn't work for me. All right, well, let me see what format works best. Let me give this a shot. I actually give that advice to anyone who's doing any sort of craft, just to begin doing and adjust as you go. Like, if you're trying to write a book, just start writing a lot. Don't write each individual paragraph and then try to perfect it before you move on to the next one.
That is sage advice right there.
I believe it very, very strongly.
Now, I guess this is just for fans, but what are your favorite non-StarCraft-related activities?
I am a big comic book reader. Not as big as I would like to be. I have continually stockpiling books I want to read. Right now, I just finished Akira, and I'm now reading DMZ.
Very, very good. I approve.
I love DMZ. That is great. I'm also chewing through my Ultimate Spider-Man per usual. I like a lot of board and card games. That's one of the biggest activities I do outside of StarCraft. Like Dominion especially is a big one for me.
That basically sounds like the turn-based StarCraft I've been wanting all these years.
Oh, Dominion is great. I mean, if there's one thing that I think would be great to plug in this PC gaming magazine is the card game Dominion. Because what's nice is that, okay, so you're going for the most land in the game. But in a sense, you're not really competing with people. You're playing alongside them. You know, like, and that's actually a nicer feeling. Like, I remember when I played chess and, like, went to tournaments in high school. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible feeling when you'd make a big blunder and then, boom, they would take your piece. No. And, and I mean, you'd feel hot in the face, but in a more explicit sense, it was like, he took my piece because I did something wrong. And what's cool about Dominion is that it feels a lot like you're all sort of running a marathon. Sure, someone might finish first, and sure, you might finish last, but you ran a marathon. You're like, yeah, I did it. That was awesome. You know, like the act of playing the game is actually very, very, very fun.
Okay, so I guess now, where can we find your material?
You can definitely check out the brand new website of day9.tv. There's a searchable video archive there, so you can easily just begin perusing through. If you want, you know, Zerg or TVZ or PVZ, just type it in the search and it'll pop those up. Or the popular Funday Monday, you can find them as well.
Beautiful.
The stream, everything's linked on the website, but the stream is justin.tv/day9tv. The Twitter is day9tv. But also the one big thing that I absolutely want to promote as much as possible, because I'm really excited about it, is the new After Hours Gaming League, which is instead of the top StarCraft II teams competing, the teams involved are Amazon, Dropbox, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, Zynga, and Yelp. So it's a lot of top tech companies just having a really fun, friendly league where I'm really hoping that this will help add more legitimacy and more visibility to the entire esports community. And you can find that at afterhoursgaming.tv or ahgl.tv. And you can even follow it on Twitter, AHGLTV. Man, I'm good at plugging stuff, Lucas.
I will definitely be following that myself.
Woohoo!
Thanks so much for your time, Sean.
Dude, thank you, Lucas. It was awesome. Woohoo!